And welcome once again to Small Blue Planet, the science fiction and fantasy podcast that takes a trip around the world visiting all sorts of fascinating and wonderful countries and finding out about the writers, the fans, the artists, and so on that we find there. And in this month's episode, we are visiting Brazil. It's one of the biggest countries in the world, definitely an emerging economic powerhouse, exactly the sort of place that you would expect to have a thriving science fiction culture. And to tell us all about what's happening there, we have two Brazilian guests, Fabio Fernandes and Jacques Barcia. Hello, guys.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi,
Cheryl.
Hi Fabio.
Hopefully I haven't...
Hi, Jax.
Oh dear, hopefully I haven't managed to butcher anybody's names yet, but why don't we start with some introductions? Fabio, you're probably the best known Brazilian in the world science fiction community. Would you like to start?
Okay, sure. First, thanks for inviting me, and I would like to say it's a pleasure to be here to talk about Brazil and science fiction community in general. What I can say... I'm 46 years old. I'm first and foremost, I'm a translator. I'm studying translation since 18 years old, and I translated pretty much science fiction and fantasy. Among several of the works I translated to Brazilian Portuguese are William Gibson's Neuromancer and Pattern Cognition. I will begin to translate next month Zero History, Cherry Priest's Bone Shaker, Anthony Burgess's A Clockwork Orange, and I'm starting right now to translate Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time saga.
That'll keep you busy.
Yes, it will be big time things here in Brazil, and aside to that, I've been publishing and writing my own fiction for 2 decades now in Portuguese, and now for the past 4 years in English as well. I have pieces, mostly flash fiction, published in. And Jeff Vandermeer's Steampunk 2, Steampunk Reloaded, La Vie Te Dar, the Apex Book of World SF Volume 2, and I'm finishing now the co-edition with Jibril Alayad of the Future Fire magazine of the post-colonialist science fiction anthology We See a Different Frontier. I guess that's enough for an introduction right now.
Well, that sounds excellent, and I'm certainly looking forward to that anthology that you and Jibril are putting together. Jacques, you're a writer and a rock star, is that correct?
Not a rock star, exactly. I used to say I growl in a grindcore band, so it's extreme metal stuff. Oh. I'm a writer. I'm 34 now. I've been publishing in English, I guess, 4 or 5 years now, just like Fabio, and I published in magazines such as Clark's World, Electric Velocipede. There's that story in the Shine anthology from Jette de Vries. The steampunk anthology Jeff Vandermeer. The first one, Jeff Vandermeer edited, I have a story, a web exclusive, which is a translation, actually. I've been doing this.
Okay, now we should talk a little bit about the language. As I understand it, Brazilian Portuguese is somewhat different from Portuguese Portuguese. Is that like British and American English, or is it more divergent?
I think it's kind of the same, not exactly, because I think the Portuguese in Portugal it has words that have other meaning. Is it right, Fabio? I guess it's a little bit more different than just British English and American English. You have different words. You have different ways of naming things. It's not just a matter of accent or just a difference in the form, the writing form of a different, you know, a difference in,
yes,
in names and how you write names. But it's just, it has different meanings, actually.
Yes, yes. If I can add something, let's just say, Charo, that it's a bit funny for us Brazilians, not so much for the Portuguese people. That every time a Brazilian film is screened in Portugal and vice versa, they have to print subtitles in the movies, and it's particularly our Portuguese friends doesn't like that. Doesn't like this at all, because they keep telling us, but it's the same language. But to be quite honest, when I am talking to a Portuguese friend, I can understand what he says or she says pretty well. No problem at all. But because of this meaning problem, because of this polysemic problem, sometimes when you say a word, but it has different meanings in Brazilian Portuguese and continental Portuguese, is what they call it in Portugal. Many times, and there's always the problem of slang, of jargon, that's so much different in Portugal than in Brazil. Sometimes you can't understand half of what they say in a movie. It's really hard stuff, really hard. And when I watch a British film or an American film, only in a very specific case, like let's say a Scottish film or a Welsh film, where like Trainspotting, for instance, where you say you can suck lots of slang. I think that's quite the same example. Yeah.
So what you're telling me is that English and Scottish English are more different than English and American English.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's it.
I think that's adequate to say that.
Yeah. There's also another thing. Brazil, since it's the biggest Portuguese-speaking country in the world, maybe half or more than half of the Portuguese speakers in the world are in Brazil, right, Fabio?
So yes, I think so.
Brazil has been Brazil and Portugal and other Portuguese speaking countries
The orthographic agreement.
An orthographic agreement to patronize the language, so everybody would write the same way. The problem is the most affected the country that was most affected by this agreement was Portugal.
Brazil they didn't accept it. They still don't accept it.
Most Brazilians hate it, actually, but Portuguese really, really loathe the thing.
Yes, because the disagreement is insane, let's face it. But that's another issue.
That's some crazy stuff. But it's interesting that not Portugal has led that Portugal was most affected by an agreement to patronize their language. It's quite insane.
What about other former Portuguese colonies? So in Mozambique or Goa in India, are they part of a community at all?
Yeah, they are. But one thing that me and Fabio always talk about is that the Portuguese community in the world is not does not communicate very well. I mean, it's not a language barrier. It's more cultural or more geographical. I don't know anybody from Goa, for example, and I believe you English speakers know people from Australia. I don't know anybody from Mozambique, but I guess you all know, I don't know, even people from the Canada or other.
Yeah, but there are cultural issues as well. I mean, I know a lot of people from Canada and Australia and New Zealand, one or two from South Africa, but I don't know anybody from Kenya or Uganda.
Yeah, but I guess it's I don't know. I have that feeling that in with Portuguese it's more profound. I don't know why. Maybe something about the colonial era. Maybe something about not a heavy interest from Brazilian speakers, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think, Fabio?
Maybe it's because it's a two-way road. On the one hand, we never had a Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And but it's a good thing on the one hand because we were never an empire, so to speak. But when these countries, in particularly in Africa, became independent, they became so independent that they struggled to get their independence. So most of them don't even speak Portuguese any longer as their prime language. I know for a fact that people in Goa, India, don't speak Portuguese, and the new generation hardly speak Portuguese any longer. Only the generation of my parents, of my grandparents, speak Portuguese,
mm-hmm.
and not in Cape Verde. They speak Portuguese. I have a friend of Cape Verde, Angola and Mozambique. All right, okay, they speak Portuguese as well. But as in India, they have 6, 7, 8 languages in Angola and Mozambique.
Maybe the same thing in Macau.
Macau as well. Sure.
In China,
exactly. It's the same thing. The situation is this. We have lots of friends in Portugal. I have a couple of friends in Cape Verde, and I simply don't know anyone else. I tried a couple of years ago to make contact with people in Angola and Mozambique for an anthology, and I couldn't find anyone. I really mm-hmm. couldn't find anyone. I'm trying to reach out for people through other people in other countries, like through Jonathan Dotze in Ghana or Lauren Books in South Africa, but they couldn't help me either because they're so much different countries in mm-hmm. different languages and cultures. So there you have it.
Okay, well, let's get on to talking about Brazil. And the first question I normally ask people is, what is the fan scene like in your country? Do you have conventions? Do you have fanzines?
Oh, sure. May I start, Jacques?
Go on.
Okay, I have...
After all, you're our ambassador. Officially.
Hardly, but I had one or two words to say about it. I had my homework done here.
Yeah, you do.
Well, for a big country, we don't have too much events, major events, that is. But we have two big events. Mostly, if you count science fiction only, if you count comic books, for instance, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, yeah.
We have lots of events. Yeah. But we are talking about science fiction. So here's the deal. Until 2010, we had two major events. We had a fan convention / academic conference called Invisibilidades, which in English means invisibilities. This event was held biannually in São Paulo, and it had three editions. The last two were under my curatorship. We did lots of good stuff, and we had a fourth event scheduled for 2012, and I had already invited Jeff van der Meer and Jeff van der Meer. But sadly, sadly, the Cultural Institute decided to end many events, including Invisibilidade. So sadly, we don't have this event anymore. They cut the funding. So what can I say? But we have two other big events, and they are pretty good indeed. We have Fantasticon, Here in São Paulo as well, it is a fan-only event, but it attracts people from all over the country. It's until 2 years ago, it was a one weekend only. Now it is a two-weekend event. I think it's something like the SFX Weekender you have in Great Britain, Chiro. But it's two weekends, and have a lot of panels, lots of workshops about science fiction, about world building, and you have lots of people dressing up. It's a party. It's a very very big and beautiful party, and everybody in the SF scene meets up there. And for the past 2 or 3 years, I think since 2010, we have another convention in Rio Grande do Sul, which is our southernmost state, the Jornada Fantástica, Fantastic Journey, shall we say.
It's Odyssey.
Thank you. Odyssey. Thank you. And it was created by an American writer, Christopher Kasten-Smith. Christopher has already published it in Realms of Fantasy, among other American magazines, but he is practically a Brazilian because he is married a Brazilian woman, and he is living here for a decade now.
He has been assimilated.
Sorry, Jax.
He was assimilated.
Yes, you're assimilated, yes.
That's very good, Jax. You got the sound coming over all weird just when you're trying to sound like a Borg. I'm impressed.
Okay. I think Christopher is doing a great job down there in South with the Fantastic Odyssey convention. And he's, as far as I know, he and Silvio Alexandre, the curator of Fantasticon, they are doing every effort they can to try and bring the world con to Brazil in the next 10, 15 years. I don't know if they will be able to do so, but I'm trying to join them in this thing. I hope they can do it.
That would be awesome.
I do too.
Awesome. Yeah.
I would love to go to a Worldcon in Brazil. I guess everybody would like it to be in Rio, of course. But
yeah, sure. We would like that too. We like that as well.
What about fanzines? Do you have any of those?
Well, we and Fabio had a fanzine a couple years ago. Actually, I had one. He had another. And we joined forces. And we did like one issue together. I can't remember, Fabio, but it was, to be honest, it was his work. I was just, you know, trying to help and couldn't help much. That's the truth. But I think Fabio can tell you a little bit more about that.
In fact, Jax had a pretty good fanzine called Calliope's. And I had one idea of a fanzine called Terra Incognita. We tried to do, we did one edition together. Then Jax went to work with me in Terra Incognita. We had 4 issues, but I had to do, I tried to do a massive undertaking, which was a little bit of a loony thing, which was a monthly fanzine. You don't do these things even on the internet. Oh, it was insane.
Mad people like me do it, but
yeah.
I gave up after 10 years.
Exactly.
Yeah, I must add that me and Fabio were big fans of your fanzine, Cheryl. We when we began this blogging thing and trying to do fanzines and reviewing, we were really, really, really inspired by your blog.
Well, thank you. That's very kind.
Okay, we managed to do 4 issues, but we were four huge issues. And one thing I think we can proud ourselves of, and I think we set the tone for everything that came after, is that most of the Brazilian fanzines today are bilingual. Yeah. Today we have two very good fanzines. Today they are irregular. Today I don't think they are regularity. They are hyper pulp. I think I had indicated that to you, Cheryl, before. Mm-hmm. An excellent fanzine edited by Alexandre Mandarino, and another from the south called Overclock Zine. It was a punk magazine back in the 90s. Then it was it stopped for a while. Then it made a comeback, become a post cyberpunk zine on the web. Edited by Van de Kleet Melo. He's a kind of our Richard Kadri of sorts, because he's he's a fetish photographer. Really, it's his profession. It's a big time photographer, artist, and both fanzines are bilingual and welcome contributors from outside Brazil. Recently, Hyperpop published, I think they published Aliette de Baudard, and Hyperpop published Berit Ellingsen from Norway. They are publishing science fiction in general. They don't have any problem with labels. On the other hand, we have a very active steampunk community in Brazil, and these are the most active today. I don't have much contact right now with them. I had contact until last year, but I took a sabbatical from the community because of work at university. But as far as I know, they are still very active. They have several monthly meetings, picnics. They have Victorian picnics in Brazil. Did you know that?
That's wonderful.
Really, I can point you to sites when they post photos of the pictures of the events. They dress in every which way possible. Steampunk, diesel punk, any way you choose. And they are very fun to be with. They are not cocky. They are not. They don't like to dictate rules. They are very easygoing people. They are fun, and these people are much more into gadgets and fashion. But some of them are just now, from 2 years from now, they are starting to write. I think we are just beginning to see a massive wave of steampunk fiction in Brazil.
Yeah, exactly. The interesting thing about the steampunk community here in Brazil is that they're extremely organized. They have distributed their organization throughout Brazil. They have chapters. One in São Paulo, one in Rio, one here in Recife, and I think they have now 15 to 20 state chapters. And like Fabio said, they are more interested. They're in it for the fun, you know. They're more interested in cosplay and fashion and gadgetry and the DIY movement and. They just now, like Fabio said, they are beginning to write their own stuff. But they're more visual. They're more interested in the culture, not just literature. I guess that they most don't even I'll be a little bit extreme here, but I don't think they even know how steampunk began. You know, they don't know. Well, they know now because The Difference Engine was recently published. Here. It was you, Fabio, who translated that?
No.
It was who was that?
Susanna Alexandria.
Ah, yeah, Susanna. Yeah. So it's been published recently, and well, now they know where it came from, The Difference Engine and the things prior to that. But they are not too much connected to steampunk in literature. They are more interested in fashion and tea parties and Victoriana in general, but like Fabio said, they are very fun. They are very easygoing. They're not the type of fandom fandom is plagued, you know?
Yeah, well, they may well be quite similar to steampunks in other parts of the world.
I
mean, it's very much a fashion movement. And the maker side of it as well, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
That mention of chapters reminded me that Brazil is a really very, very big country. I guess that must be a bit of a problem, like it is for Australia, in that really you have to fly to get from one city to another. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Brazil, I think it's the fifth largest country in the world. There are some my home city, Recife, is in the middle of the not the middle, but in the coast, but in the middle of the northeastern part of Brazil. If I want to go to São Paulo driving, I will take 3 days, 50 hours. Yeah, if I take a plane, I'll take 3 hours, 3.5 hours. If I want to cross the country, I'll take maybe 6-8 hours. It is really big. Through plane, with a car, maybe it's really hard to go to the Amazon, for example. People think that we Brazilians know the Amazon. We live in forest and stuff like that. I've been to Manaus, which is the capital of the Amazon state, only once in my life, and it was 6 months ago. It's quite big here. We have some issues with infrastructure that make us not very able to cross the country.
Yeah. So you have an idea, Cheryl. I am green with envy of your railroad infrastructure because we don't have one. You have an idea. We don't have an infrastructure, not even similar to India. I'm telling the whole truth to you. Our railroad structure is next to non-existent. We cannot cross country. I'm speaking of passengers trains. Okay, of course we have a good infrastructure to cargo holdings, to mining, to coal, corn, etc. If you care, if you want to transport all these products via railroad, you can do it in Brazil. But railroad infrastructure for passengers, forget it. You don't have one. You cross country by bus or by car or by plane. Fortunately, because of the economic emergence for us here, the plane tickets are becoming more cheap for us. Becoming cheaper and cheaper for us, so it's becoming we are more and more able to cross the country. But even so, I can go to Recife I hardly have a problem to go to Recife these days. But even so, I cannot go there every month. Mm-hmm. I can go every 3-4 months. Here I'm living in São Paulo. My parents live in Rio. I can easily go there every month, no problem. But even to the south, to Porto Alegre, if it is 2 hours by plane, I can't go there every month. So we really have to have chapters or lodges, some steampunks call this chapters. It's just very funny. But we have to have some organization. I think the steampunks are doing this in an easygoing manner. They are doing it very well because they are doing it in the most organized manner. We are of the oldest generations of science fiction fandom. We are not so organized. I think these past few years, because of these conventions and because of the internet and the communities, Facebook, Twitter, etc., we are becoming more and more organized. I think we are now having two or three small presses They are publishing more and more of us, and now we are more able to gather ourselves in small groups, and thus are able to have small meetings, and thus finally get some kind of organization. But we had used it to have a club, the Science Fiction Readers Club, which still exists, but only in paper. But it doesn't exist anymore as an organization. And I'm really questioning if we will have such organization. In the way you have British Science Fiction Association or America have Science Fiction Writers of America, I don't think we will have such an organization anytime soon in the future.
Yeah, there's been a lot of new people, you know, in the community, and the internet had a huge impact on that. I mean, some 10, 15 years ago, science fiction and Brazilian culture was really, really, really dominated by São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro, which are the wealthiest states in the country, and they run not only the economics but the cultural aspect of Brazil. Brazilian culture it's really based on São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. I mean, mass culture, not culture, but mass culture is really dominated by these two states. And the internet had a huge impact on that. I mean, I'm from Recife. I'm from the periphery of Brazil, and I've been involved, deeply involved in the science fiction community only because I had an internet connection some, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I think that Christopher Kasten-Smith in Rio Grande do Sul now is doing a great job with the Fantastic Odyssey because of the internet. The most interesting lodges or chapters of this steampunk community are not in São Paulo or Rio de Janeiro, are from Mato Grosso or from even the Amazon. You know, this we have decentralized science fiction and fantasy here in Brazil because of the internet. You know, and though we have these issues, this infrastructure issues, we can't physically meet every month, or it is hard to attend one convention or another. We're always connected online. You know, we have many online communities, and we talk a lot via the internet. We have we could have a virtual convention if we wanted to, you know. So we things are better because of the internet now.
Alrighty, moving on. Could you tell me what English-speaking writers are popular in Brazil? I guess William Gibson is obviously one from the amount of translating Fabio's done, but other writers?
As incredible as it may sound, William Gibson is not very popular. He's popular among my generation. I mean, people in the 40s, but for young people, 20s or early 30s, the usual suspects media related: Stephanie Meyer, J.K. Rowling, and George R.R. Martin because of Game of Thrones.
What a surprise.
Yes, right now we have all of Martin's books translated, or fantasies books translated to Brazilian Portuguese. That's a surprise.
If you let me, Fabio, recently, sure. I think two weeks ago, I guess, George Martin made a blog post speaking about Brazil, because his books are coming, other books, other anthologies, the Wild Cards, and other collections he wrote are being published in Brazil, and he talked a little bit about how successful his books were in Brazil, and he seems really satisfied.
Yes, because people are discovering Martin now, and they're loving him. And that's a good side of the mass media effect. But in the past couple of years, we've been flooded by translations of fantasy series and game-related books. For instance, the Halo series. Now, Brazilian fans are getting to know Greg Bear and Karen Travis, for instance, but because of the Halo series. Not because of nobody gives a damn about the Wes Har series of Karen Travis, or Blood Music, for instance. But they are devouring the Halo series. But I think that's the beginning. And young adult books is also thriving, growing a lot here in Brazil. Moira Young's Blood Red Road, for instance. I had the pleasure of having translated this book as well. And Lauren DiStefano's Wither as well. They were big sellers last year here. And Cherry Priest's Bone Shaker. These were some of the greatest sellers here, as far as I know. Also, Trudy Canavan. And Brandon Sanderson, that's important. Yeah. Elantris has just been published here, and since we are in a few months we are going to translate to publish The Eye of the World, I think it's safe to say we are not only going to publish Sanderson's uptake on Jordan's, but also his own books as well. Aside from Elantris, his other sagas. For fantasy, at least, it's been a very good time for English-speaking writers in Brazil. I can only hope this science fiction follows the same road. I believe for what is called young adult, it is really, really a very good time, a big time. We can only hope. I don't have any fresh news to tell about this in Brazil aside from Zero History. But what I can tell you is that we will have more of Cherry Priest here in Brazil, and more young adult books. Cory Doctorow too. Cory Doctorow has been a little abroad, and now Homeland will be published here. I knew for a fact that two publishers were very interested in publishing Neal Stephenson's Anathem, but they gave up because of the sheer size of the book. The volume.
They're not the only ones.
They told me it won't sell. That was that. I was very sorry because I believe it would sell, but what could I tell them? Mm-hmm. I would gladly have translated it, but anything to add, Jax?
No, I think that that one characteristic of Brazilian fandom or Brazilian fans that the old guard, they all love the old guard of science fiction. Isaac Asimov, Clarke, Philip K. Dick is very popular here, even for for the new generation. He's very popular. His Men in the High Castle and the Three Stigmata is also published in Portuguese. I'm not sure, but he has several books published in here in Brazil, but. The interesting thing is that there's a huge gap between the old generation of fans and writers and the new generation. Like Fabio said, the new generation are looking to George Martin and these Cherry Priest and the new generation of writers, but the old guard is still linked to the old guard of science fiction, Isaac Asimov and their turf, you know. I don't know. I couldn't really say who's really popular here besides George Martin, and only because of the HBO series.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that, that Moira Young is popular. She lives not far away from me in England, so
you can tell her about next time you meet her.
Yeah, I certainly will. Alrighty. Brazilian writers who are available in English. We talked a bit at the start of the show about your own work, and we'll have show notes so that people can go to the various stories that you have online. Also, of course, there's Jacques' story in Shine and Fabio's story in the Apex Book of World Science Fiction. Going beyond that, I found quite a few stories by Brazilian writers in Internova, the online magazine. Mostly they're by a chap called Gerson Lodi Ribeiro.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about him?
Well, he's incredible. He's amazing.
He's a personal friend of mine. I met him almost 25 years ago. Gerson is a chap that's been that had the honor to be the only person who has been published in the twice in the now deceased Brazilian version of Isaac Asimov's magazine. This Brazilian version lasted only 2 years in 1989 and 1990, and published mostly 90% of its production was translations. I was one of the translations. It was one of my first translation jobs. And in its second and last year, they started to publish one story of a Brazilian author per month. And Gerson had the honor of having two stories. I believe it was in February and in November issue of the second year, and two excellent stories. One of them, I believe he translated this story, but I can't find it. I couldn't find it anywhere to indicate it to you. It's called The Ethics of Treason. It's an alternate history. It's about an episode of history which I'm afraid Anglo-American readers won't know anything about. It's about the Brazil Paraguay War. We had this war at about the same time, a few years after the American Civil War, and it was between Brazil and Paraguay, of course, in the south of Brazil. But this war was Brazil was helped strongly by the United Kingdom. It's a well-known story today, and Brazil won. But in this story, Gerson took a flight of imagination and tried to imagine. It's very, very interesting because in its own way, it's a kind of proto steampunk story. He wasn't thinking of it at that time, but I seem to recall it was it had a kind of steampunk sensibility, and it portrayed a Brazil dominated by Paraguay, which is a kind of preposterous situation seen with our eyes, but it was quite well structured, and he won two awards with this story in Brazil, mm-hmm. and I think he tried to be nominated to a Sidewise Award, but he couldn't make it, and he made it 2 or 3 years maybe a few years later with Chochi Quetzal. an alternative history, which you are familiar, Cheryl, because he wrote it with a pen name of a woman, Carla Cristina Pereira.
Yes.
And as I was telling you by email, it fooled a lot of people, including us. We had no idea Carla didn't exist. We are pretty sure Carla was a historian. She was a historian. She lived in a city called Niterói, which is a city very near Rio de Janeiro. And so, but she was married. She had a couple of kids and the cats and the dog. And she never could meet us in our Saturday afternoon meetings. So we thought, okay, that's okay. She has lots on her hands. It's only normal that she can't go. And we took 6 or 7 years to find out that was Jerson all the time.
Yeah, he's written two stories, I think, featuring this Aztec princess, Huchiquetzal.
Yes.
They were both published in an Australian magazine called Altair. One of them is also available through Internova, but hopefully we can find the one in Altair as well. The Australians, I think it's around 1998, 1999, 2000, they're producing this magazine out of South Australia with a lot of international writers in it. It's very interesting.
Yes, I've heard of it. Gerson wrote these stories in he himself translated these stories to English. But it wasn't his main interest. He at that time he was interested, but then he turned back to Portuguese again, and then he turned Xochiquetzal in a novel. He published this novel 2 or 3 years ago. It was a big success in the fandom. So much that everyone is asking him to do a second book, in a series, but so far he hasn't promised anything. But what we do have right now, Cheryl, is a lot of very good writers, particularly writers of my generation of the in their 40s, 50s, or even 60s, that are able to write in English or to translate their stories into English, but they simply are not that much interested in doing so. We had some very good authors that published stories in English in the past. We had Braulio Tavares, who had published in the Canadian magazine On Spec, for instance. And he was, as far as I know, the first and only so far Brazilian writer to have participated in the Clarion workshop in 1987 or 88. I don't remember.
Well, he has a story in Cosmos Latinos.
Exactly.
Andre Canheiro and Geronimo Monteiro.
Yes, exactly. Geronimo Monteiro was a great editor here. He was the first, he edited comic books here in Brazil. He was the first to publish Donald Duck in Brazil in the 50s, 1950s. And but as incredible as it may sound, I've heard a strange story. A couple of years ago, a common friend of ours wanted to pay a tribute to Geronimo Monteiro here in São Paulo and invited his son to the tribute. His son went there grudgingly. And in the moment that he got the medal or the plaque, I don't recall what it was, he went into a diatribe and said he wasn't happy to be there because he wouldn't want to have his father associated to science fiction. Very, very uncomfortable there.
Weird.
But Geronimo Monteiro, I haven't met him personally. He died, I think, in the early 70s. But everyone who met him said he was a very good chap, and he loved science fiction. and he was and he would have like the tribute. So I really don't care about his son. Braulio is also a well accomplished musician, composer, and eventually he writes in English as well, but it's not his cup of tea either. I was talking to another friend of mine, Romeu Martins, and Romeu writes only in Portuguese, but I translated a fragment of a steampunk story of his for the Steampunk Bible last year. And I for one, I'm very interested in translating some of Romeu's stories to English. He already authorized me to do so. And now I'm confident that something in this respect will be made in the next few years, because there is at least one publishing house, a very small press called Editora Draco, which is, as of now, has put virtually all its catalog online for sale on Amazon Kindle. It's only a first step. Its editor Eric Santos had told me they intend to put its catalog for other another venues, for other devices as well, not only Kindle. But the more important thing to say is that they are very interested to do online editions. They are selling not only novels, but they are selling short stories only. And they are interested in starting to sell English translations of the stories. This, for me, is the most important thing, because this has never happened in the Brazilian science fiction fandom history. If this really happens, it will be... awesome to the community and awesome for everyone involved, because I think we have many very good authors with a very good and different worldview that I believe Anglo-American writers will like very much to read.
Yeah.
You have a local Amazon store in Brazil now, right?
Yes, sure. We have. We do.
And you can buy Wizards Tower books there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
She says yes. Getting a plug-in. I found one other Brazilian author available in translation. That's Roberto de Souza Causo.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
He has a story in Internova called The Most Beautiful Woman in the World.
Yes, yes. Causo is one of the most prolific Brazilian writers. He's... is of my generation, my age practically. I think he's 46 or 47 years old, and he has published in lots. He has been translated a lot in China, in France, in Eastern Europe as well. I think in Romania, in Croatia, I think, and he's one of our most translated writers. He's also we have quite from the past few years, because of Stephanie Meyer, J.K. Rowling, Martin, etc. We already have three or four Brazilian writers that live exclusively from their rights, author rights. It's very rare in Brazil, but we have three or four. But only fantasy writers. Causo, I believe, is the only one. That's a wild guess, okay? I think he is the only science fiction Brazilian writer who lives specifically from what he writes. I don't know if it's exactly of his author rights or. Because he writes, he also do technical writing as well, and so I really don't know if it's he's living because of his fiction exclusively, But among us, I think he has the more production.
Okay.
Kaozu is also known because of his scholarship. I mean, his kind of a know-all about Brazilian science fiction. He knows the history of science fiction since the 1800s and knows every publisher and every writer, every story. You know, he's a kind of an encyclopedia of science fiction, of Brazilian science fiction. He's quite known for that.
Yeah, he's actually written an article for Internova about Latin American science fiction, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. He's married to an American girl, I guess, which is a scholar too. She's she works for an American university, I guess, and she studies specifically Brazilian science fiction or Latin American science fiction, something like that. So he's this couple is quite known for this cataloging and scavenging Latin American science fiction.
Alrighty. Moving on to some of the people who are perhaps not much translated, there are two other writers that I'm aware of. One is Christina Lasaitis, who is a woman because I met her in Melbourne. And also Louis Brass, which I believe that's a pen name for Nelson de Oliveira.
Yes, exactly.
Could you tell me a bit about those two?
Okay, do you want to do the honors, Jax?
I know both. I guess Fabio knows better the two of them because they live in São Paulo. Cristina is a very good writer. Is an excellent writer, and he won some awards for her writing. Something to do with an award from São Paulo, specifically from São Paulo. Well, she's great. And Luiz Braz, which is Nelson de Oliveira, he's quite known in the mainstream literature scene. He's one rare case of a very successful realism writer that is looking to the science fiction and fantasy side of literature, and is doing a great job. He has edited some anthologies. He wrote I think two or three books which have to do with science fiction, which is not hard science fiction. It's more like slipstream or something like that. But it's genre fiction, and they are great. I mean, we have great writers. We do have great writers, but they're kind of, you know, they're hidden because they only speak Portuguese. They do not publish in English, and sometimes they're even hidden inside Brazilian community.
Yes, I would just like to add one thing. Christina Lasaitis has published so far only one book, a collection of stories, but she's also quite known because she's a lesbian writer, and she has edited the first ever in Brazil so far, 2 years ago, she has a two-volume queer SF literature collection of stories, anthology of stories.
Right.
It's quite an accomplishment here in Brazil. 15 authors in two volumes called this anthology is called the Fantástica Literatura Queer. There is the Fantastic Queer Literature. It's a very, very good anthology. Unfortunately, it hasn't been translated yet, but I'm confident it will be. And she's becoming quite an accomplished editor. It's very interesting. I think it will be very interesting because she's very young. I think she's 25 or 27 years old. And it will be very interesting to see what the future has in hold for her.
Mm. I did notice, by the way, that you have a story in Outlaw Bodies, which involves a trans person, and Jacques' story in Shine involves a gay couple, so clearly there's plenty of queer literature already happening in Brazil.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I think we are trying to break some boundaries here in Brazil because take São Paulo, for instance. I don't know. I think Jax will be able to talk to you about Recife, but here in São Paulo, we have the biggest gay pride parade in the world. Here in São Paulo, I'm very proud of it because we can walk holding hands in Brazil, gays and lesbians can kiss in the streets. Not in every city in Brazil we can do this, mind you. Even in Rio, which is considered, maybe many Anglo-Americans may think that Rio is a more tolerant city. It is not. Unfortunately, I'm sad to say I'm from Rio, and I can tell you it is not. São Paulo is far more gay friendly, and in Rio is not, unfortunately. And I think São Paulo is so great, is so comfortable, so hunky dory for you to be with your lover. And I think it's good for you to be here and to write about this. I think it's good to be in Brazil to live in São Paulo these days, and to be a gay or a lesbian.
Yeah, I think Brazil is as gay and friendly as the rest of the world. You know, my city Recife is very very intolerant. Because of the my state, the region I live in is very male oriented. They we have this machismo, this hatred for gays and lesbians and even for women. There are many cases of domestic violence here. So, like Fabio said, we are trying to break some barriers here. I think it's important to write about the other, write about, you know, about everybody, actually. And in the SF community, we have some, not just one or two, but some gay and lesbian writers. I remember Eric Novello, which is, I guess is not published in English, but he could. He's a translator too, and I'm calling at you, Eric. You should translate your stories, okay? Because he's really good. He's an awesome writer. He's openly gay, and we have many other examples. I think we have six or five openly gay Brazilian writers, which are very very good writers. You know, they are quality writers, and I guess it's a really positive. It's one thing that really makes me proud of the Brazilian scene. We are inside the community. We are not as gay and friendly as the rest of Brazil, as the rest of the world, actually.
We hear a fair amount about Brazil, obviously, at my end, for very sad reasons, in that the rate of murders of trans women in Brazil is running at about four a week at the moment.
Yeah.
So, Fabio, we also on this podcast talk about language and how it affects how people write, how it affects the ability to translate into English. We've had some very interesting stories from our Finnish and Chinese friends about the peculiarities of their language vis-a-vis English. What is it about Portuguese that is there anything in there particular about it that makes it useful for writing speculative fiction?
Well, you are asking me about the Portuguese to English or English to Portuguese?
Either.
Okay, it's very interesting because first of all, It's very interesting because I always like to focus on the sonority of the words, how words sound, because everyone is focusing on the meaning of the words. But okay, the meaning is something that every regular translator or translator is already must, it's a must do. Okay, you must you already know how to translate a banana. For instance, banana doesn't have translation, okay. But you must know that certain words are that has translators have exact translations, okay. For instance, red is vermelho in Portuguese. And that's that. Okay, that's no other possible translation for that color because that's a given. Okay? But when you are translating an expression, a slang, you have to go with what we call the zeitgeist, the l'air du temps, the sign of the times. For instance, I translated Clockwork Orange 4 or 5 years ago, but it was the second Brazilian translation. The first translation was in the 70s, the early 70s. And it was, I had to redo it all. It was a radically different translation because, to try to give you a palpable example, the translation of the words that Burgess used, even if you call the Nadsat, even taking into consideration that the Nadsat wasn't an English language, evidently Burgess, let's say, anglified the Nadsat. You had to read the book in English, so I had to pick up the English, that particular Burgess English, and translate it. And one question we translators ask ourselves all the time is, if I was this author and this author was born in my country, how would I have written this book? It's not always an easy question because we can't emulate exactly the style of this writer, but we can't add slangs of our country as if he were really Brazilian. Burgess was not a Brazilian writer, so I have to do it sparingly, and several words I had to maintain in English. I had to play, to play with the words. I had to create neologisms. In some cases, I had to use Portuguese, ancient Portuguese words, in order to fill its this needs of the writer. I'm sorry if I'm not being very clear. I'm trying to tell is a translation at a certain moment. It's almost like poetry. You have to guide yourself by the sound of the words, and the sound of the words will almost certainly give you the right way to go in the story. Of course, I'm not talking about ship stuff. I'm not talking about formula stuff. I'm talking about literature. That will be an argument much used about what constitutes great literature. But I'm talking about science fiction too. I'm talking just about this Anthony Burgess, as I'm talking about Boneshaker, for instance. That for me constitutes good literature. Yeah, and Boneshaker, that's just one last thing, which I'm trying to talk to you. I would have translated the word Boneshaker, because Boneshaker is a kind of a slang in English. You can translate the word bone shaker in Portuguese. It would have been something like treme ossos, sacode ossos. But it doesn't have this right sound, and nobody speaks this word in Portuguese. It isn't a neologism. Everyone would have listened to this word and would have known what it's about. But everyone would have gone, what's it, about?
It doesn't mean anything.
Yes.
It carries no meaning culturally.
Yes, but Bone Shaker, it's very interesting because Bone Shaker was, it was a book which was already known a couple of years before its publication. So sometimes the translation must know the right time to step back and to tell himself, I must not translate this particular word, because this particular word is a keyword to the book. I explain in the book what this device, this infernal device, does. But I must not translate the word. And it all went marvelously well, because everybody liked the translation. And when I asked several readers, everyone agreed that bone shaker was the right word, that I should never have translated the word. So there you have it.
Are there any things that you can say in Portuguese that you just can't say in English?
Oh, sure. Sure. One word I always like to use, although some people will tend to disagree, but I can tell you that, because right now I can safely say this because I'm finishing a story which has this word in the title for We See a Different Frontier, is the word gambiarra. Gambiarra, yeah, Jacques is laughing because he knows about it. Gambiarra, it comes from the Italian. But gambiarra is a word that nowadays only Brazilian people use this word. Gambiarra can be safely translated technically in English by as a kludge, if I'm not mistaken. But that's for electrical stuff. It's like jerry-rigging something. You have to do something on the fly with electrical wire, then you jerry-rig something. Okay, that's a kludge. That's you can call gambiarra. So, but gambiarra in Brazil is when you take this kind of stuff on the fly and apply to every which way, every situation, and you can name it in the world. You, Cherry, are in charge of a major convention. Something went very wrong, and you must fix it on the fly. What do? You do a gambiarra. You will do whatever you can do. You take one person, and you go fix the situation. What we will do, I don't care what you will do. We'll do whatever, and I'm not talking anything illegal. I'm talking something, thinking outside the box, thinking something. Let's talk something out of pop culture. Something MacGyver will do.
Pick up
MacGyver bubblegum
is...
and a paperclip, and you do something to fix the whole situation and defuse the bomb.
It certainly sounds like a very useful word for science fiction.
Yeah.
Yes. MacGyverism
is the king of gambiarra, definitely.
Yes. is our particular god in gambiarra. It's a MacGyverism, you should say.
Yeah. And there's the word saudade too. There's this discussion about if either it is really a word that cannot be translated, but saudade is like a longing, but it's not exactly like a longing. It's something more profound. And I don't know. It's really hard to translate saudade, isn't it, Fabio?
Yeah, but currently nowadays I just disagree, because it falls in the category of words that are per se are untranslatable, but you can translate the feeling. You yourself said it. It's a longing. Okay, I'm okay with that. And you can safely say to someone you love, I miss you. And it's the same thing when you say with gusto, when you say when you are horny, when you say, I miss you. It's the same thing you say to someone you love, estou com saudade. Ah, que saudade. It's the same thing in Portuguese and in English. But gambiarra, you can't go wrong. Gambiarra, no. There is no translation for that.
Isn't Saudade the name of the city in M. John Harrison's Light?
Exactly. Yeah. It is. It is.
Oh, I'm just starting to read Light right now. I'm happy to go arrive to this part of the reading right now.
That it's makes awesome so book. Much sense.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll read it right now.
Well.
Of course, there's only one Brazilian word that everybody outside knows that you don't need to translate, and that's caipirinha.
Caipirinha. I love caipirinha.
And samba, probably.
And samba.
Oh, samba. Yeah, we know samba as well.
Next time I'm there, I'm going to make you an authentic Brazilian caipirinha, Cheryl.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Don't make me forget it.
But you'll have to samba later.
No, not at all.
Oh, dear. Of course, football is a Brazilian word as well. We all know that.
Football is a Brazilian word. Definitely.
Okay. One final question. Are there any writers from non-English speaking countries that are popular in Brazil? I guess maybe some writers from other Latin American countries?
Yeah, definitely. The great Latin American writers like Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Borges and all those guys are really really popular here. But mostly, I guess the Latin American writers are more, you know, involved in the Brazilian conscious. You know, I don't know about the. Maybe in the academy, with scholars, guys like Coetzee or Salman Rushdie, people like that. But I don't think that genre writers from non-English genre writers are even known here. What do you say, Fabio?
Oh, I have three names I have chosen from Latin America. That are simply the cream of the crop right now. I can safely say two of them are translated in English. That are Carlos Ruiz Zafón, author, and Roberto Bolaño from Chile. And there's the Spanish Enrique Villamatas. I'm putting the name in the chat here. And these three authors, Roberto Bolaño more than the other two, but they wrote fantastic literature, flirting with the legacy of Borges and Cortázar. But Villamatas less than the others, but even so, they like to cross the blur, to blur the boundaries between fiction and reality. And for instance, I think China Mieville tried to do this in The City and the City, in this tradition, trying to do in using the British tradition and the European tradition what these authors did and do in Latin American tradition. Some disagree, but I think China Mieville tried to do this. If he didn't succeed exactly like he wanted to, but yeah, I think he tried. And these three authors are the most read authors in Brazil right now by Brazilian writers, I must say. Zafón sells a lot. Bolaño and Villamatas, I don't know about it. They are being published by big publishing houses here in Brazil. I don't know about numbers. I know Zafón is a bestseller, but I don't think Bolaño and Villamatas are, but they are well read by good writers. And very interesting, but by good mainstream writers that refuse science fiction and fantasy. But they love Bolaño and Villamatas. We all been there before, Cheryl?
Oh, yes, yes. And Zaphon is a big seller in the UK as well. But his books always appear on the mainstream shelves, not on science fiction.
Yeah.
In fact, if you asked British science fiction fans, I think a lot of them would never have heard of him.
And I bet the opposite is true. If you ask mainstream people, they all swear that Zaphon has nothing to do with the Fantastica.
Oh, yes, definitely. Okay, are there any other things that you guys wanted to talk about while you're here?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I would like to say a last thing. I promise I'll be short and concise. I think you asked me before what writers from Brazil I would like to see translated into English. I didn't think I answered this question. I would like to name two or three. I talked about Romeu Martins, but I would like to talk to only to cite two more writers. I would like to talk about Otávio Aragão and Carlos Orsi. These two writers, I think you won't find anything of them in English, but they write in English. I think they are sharpening their knives right now as we speak, not to kill anyone, but to make their entrance in the English market. I think they are preparing themselves because they are that good. Otávio Aragão was a first hour steampunk as well. He wrote a very good book, an extremely good novel, 4 or 5 years ago. A sort of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen kind of book, but a literary steampunk of first quality. And Carlos Orsi is a hard science fiction. Is a science journalist, and he has one or two novels, but several short stories of great quality. And I can't recall one story. Even though our political views are quite opposite, I can't recall one single story of his that I haven't loved. He is very good, and I would really like to see both of them translated into English.
Yeah, there are two writers, two Brazilian writers I'd love to see published in English. One is Eric Novello. I already told you about that. He's a urban fantasy writer, and he's top quality writer. He's really awesome. And there's my friend Ana Cristina Rodrigues, which is a great writer and editor, and he has a series of short stories, and she's working on a novel for quite some time now about the Portuguese chroniclers. You know that in the times of the great navigations, there were these guys, the chroniclers, which were inside the ships, and they would chronicle the whole trip. And she takes that. Think about what Naomi Novik did with the Napoleon War. She does something similar with Portugal. He builds a fantastic Portugal, and it tells a story about this one chronicler which is going in an adventure to the end of the world. It's awesome. It's really awesome, and I think it would be very good if she translated some stories to the English.
Okay, well, thank you, Fabio and Jack, for joining me here on Small Blue Planet. It's been a great conversation, as always. We will get this up online sometime later this month. For everybody else, thank you again for being with us. And I need to go and chase a few people from somewhere else in the world. I think we might go back to Europe for the next one, because I have a few people in France that I want to follow up on.
But yeah, that'd be awesome.
You never know where we might end up. Alrighty. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Fabio. Thank you, Karen. It was lovely. It was amazing.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Karen.